Chapter 23. Probable or impossible? Evan made his way to the Arctic biome in twilight. He was meeting Seth McGeorge in the research library located off the main entrance. It was a much quieter, study area than the library in the rainforest biome, and therefore the one he preferred. Outside, just to the right of the glass structure which housed the winter-hardy animals, a large waterfall cascaded down a series of rocks, rushing away in a torrent that ran under a bridge. Canadian tundra gardens lined the winding pathway leading up to the main glass doors. In the spring and summer, the gardens were filled with small, unusual flowers, a few woody shrubs, and a variety of grasses. Now that it was fall, the flowers were gone, but the grasses had turned various colors of green, rust, and beige. Evan thought they were impressive to look at. Next to the gardens, in a fancy black iron and glass enclosure, a few little white foxes were finishing off their fish dinner, and a large caribou was quietly chewing his cud. Above the black iron enclosure was a giant banner that read, "The Arctic Biome. Come, explore the north. Marvel at your evolving world." Opening up the tall, blue-tented doors, Evan breathed in the salty sea aroma. Floor-to-ceiling glass windows allowed him to see the polar bear and the seals swimming off on their well-separated sides of the large pool, which was surrounded by man-made snow and ice. The polar bear was the main attraction of the Arctic biome, especially at feeding time. She had perfected the art of catching fish in her mouth as they were tossed to her by her trainer, and she was very big. The seals on the other side of the tall glass enclosure could do the same trick, but they didn't have the same commanding presence. Seth was already sitting inside the library at the desk they always used. With a pile of heavy textbooks beside him, his red head was studiously bent over his notebook and calculator. He was punching in an equation. "Good evening, young man," Evan said to him in a friendly fashion. "Which exam do you have tomorrow?"
"Biochemistry," Seth replied wearily. "It's going to be tough."
"I agree," Evan said. "It will be tough. I remember that one." Sitting down across from Seth, Evan quizzed him for a couple of hours on various formulas, the components of a cell, methods of communication between the cells, and the steps to ward off disease and mutations. He showed Seth the diagrams in the textbooks which he needed to memorize and had him draw a few from memory. "So any more questions?" Evan asked, noticing that it was now past 8 o'clock.
"I do have one," Seth admitted.
"But it won't be on the exam tomorrow."
"That's okay," Evan assured him.
"What is it?"
Seth hesitated.
"You've studied science for many years," he began, pointing to the starry sky, which could be clearly seen through the glass greenhouse structure. Seth asked, "Have you ever looked up into the sky at night and wondered where it all began?"
"You mean like the universe?" Evan frowned.
Seth nodded.
"Well, I guess the simplest answer is that it all began at the Big Bang."
With a shrug, Seth replied, "That's perhaps the most accepted answer at the moment, but how can you be sure it's true?"
"Physics and cosmology aren't my areas of specialty," Evan admitted, "but most scientists would affirm this theory correlates with the evidence we have available. I trust the scientific community. There are a lot of brilliant minds at work."
Seth prodded a little more. "But the way knowledge and understanding develop," he said, "theories change based on new discoveries." He pointed to his textbooks, adding, "What I'm studying right now wasn't known 100 years ago, and some of it would have been considered preposterous."
"Fair enough," Evan conceded. "But what does that have to do with the Big Bang?"
"Well, take Einstein, for example," Seth elaborated. "He had a brilliant mind, yet he struggled to remain unbiased by accepted scientific understanding, even when the evidence challenged it. His own cosmological model in 1917 showed the universe was expanding, not static. But because he accepted scientific belief at the time, which stated that the universe was static, he altered his own model to fit the scientific beliefs of the day."
"True. I had heard that," Evan considered. "And I believe that only 15 years later, when the discoveries by Hubble and his colleagues showed the universe was expanding, Einstein had to admit he'd been wrong to doubt his original cosmological model, adding that his cosmological constant had obscured the truth. He'd made a major breakthrough," Evan reflected, "but he doubted it."
With a nod, Seth agreed.
So if a brilliant mind like Einstein could be biased by the prevailing mode of scientific thought, he reasoned, who's to say the scientists of today aren't biased in their interpretation of the Big Bang? Shaking his head, Evan smiled. The theory will likely be fine-tuned as new information becomes available, he admitted, but that's what we scientists do. Science is all about asking hard questions and searching for answers. It's through the process of experimentation, calculations, and trial and error that we discover and map out better theories. I find it exhilarating. We're like explorers discovering new lands. I love it too, Seth agreed with a chuckle. And I do believe that following the true scientific method can lead to the discovery of truth. But if we are explorers, the maps we inherit from earlier generations may sometimes turn out to be off track, leading everyone in the wrong direction. That's a bleak outlook, Seth, Evan frowned. Seth paused before responding. Solomon, the wisest man in the Old Testament, said in Ecclesiastes 3, that God has made everything beautiful in its time. He has also set eternity in the hearts of men, yet they cannot fathom what God has done from beginning to end. Seth, Evan rebuffed with a laugh, you're at university now. You're in high-level lectures, reading from the best textbooks, learning from some of the most intelligent humans that have ever lived. Most readily dismissed any notion of a God. Many scientists dismiss God, but not all, Seth reminded him. But it's so unlikely, Evan argued earnestly, even though he hadn't dismissed the concept completely himself. There's just no proof or evidence of a God, he stated harshly. The universe began with the Big Bang, and physics shows the theory is the most plausible explanation. My best advice for you, is one budding scientist to another, is to go where the evidence leads. But what if the evidence we think demonstrates a Big Bang is actually pointing to the beginning of God's creative act, Seth reasoned. No way, Evan retorted with a laugh, having never considered this possibility. That's just trying to force God into modern scientific discoveries. You won't make accurate discoveries if you are biased like that. You need to open your mind and read what other intelligent scientists have written. Have you read Professor LeMann's book, Faith or Fact, An End to Delusion? Yes, Seth nodded. It's pretty hard-hitting. Threw me for a loop initially. I had to take a few days off school to recover. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Evan commiserated. But it's better to know the truth, right? Then he frowned. And you're still arguing for a God? It wasn't the only book I read, Seth assured him. Scientists always gather sufficient data before making final conclusions, right? Okay, Evan shrugged. So then what? I searched everything that had been written in response to his book. There are numerous articles both for and against his book, and even some online debates and public lectures that critique and challenge his claims. But how convincing were any of those challenges, Evan prodded. Who was giving them? You've got to be unbiased, Seth, if you really want honest answers. Of course, faith-based communities aren't going to agree with Professor LeMann's. There are excellent critiques from scientific researchers, physicists, mathematicians, and scientific philosophers. The best debate was between a physicist and Professor LeMann's. I'll send you the link, he said, picking up his phone and Googling the debate online. It took place 10 years ago, shortly after his book was released. The physicist, Dr. Mason, clearly shows that faith or fact has a lot of slickly worded arguments and suppositions, but not much in the way of hard evidence or data. No way, Evan argued. There have been rave reviews in the scientific community for his book. Professor LeMann's must have based his book on hard evidence, or he would never have gained such tremendous support. Have you looked at anything that critiques his work? Well, no, Evan admitted hesitantly, taken off guard. Have you considered any arguments from those who were once atheists and now follow the evidence that leads them to admit that a highly intelligent creator, like the God that many believe in, is the more probable explanation for the existence of such a perfectly well-tuned universe? With surprise, Evan clarified, you're telling me that there are respected scientists who believe in the possibility of a God based on actual evidence? No one I know has ever mentioned this. Really? Many, Seth assured him, and their writings, debates, and lectures are all available online. He sent the debate link to Evan's phone, and there was a beep in response. If you recognize the way in which bias can skew an investigation, then you should also consider the arguments on both sides, and then decide where the weight of evidence lies. With a shrug, Evan replied, I'm sure the Big Bang explains everything better than a creator god.
The redhead disagreed.
Even the best theories attempting to explain how the Big Bang could have worked still require pre-existing matter and a specific, purposeful cause for the universe to begin at that moment, Seth argued. Up until the 1930s, scientists, including Einstein, did not believe or accept that the universe had a starting point like they do today. But the Bible has always stated that there was a specific moment in time when it all began. The very first verse in the Bible states, In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. God prepared the matter. He was the cause. He spoke a word and it happened. Given enough time and opportunity, anything could happen without him, Evan reiterated. With a thoughtful look on his face, Seth continued, Okay, if you were to go out one wintry morning and see a well-sculpted snowdrift, would you assume your neighbor had spent weeks planning its design and a whole day carving the shape? No, Evan frowned, wondering what Seth was setting him up for. Any Canadian knows what wind does to snow. Right, Seth nodded. And when you examined the snowdrift carefully, you would find that it was a pile of intricate snowflakes, but nothing more than that. Of course, Evan agreed. Seth smiled. But let's say the next morning you went out and discovered an elaborate ice image, a totally perfect representation of Professor LeMans. It was sculpted with all the white hairs of his goatee defined, the wrinkles in just the right places, even a cell phone sticking out of his right lab coat pocket. Evan had to laugh as he imagined the scenario. And not only that, Seth continued dramatically, inside the ice sculpture, there was a system of lights that perfectly illuminated the professor's image at night, and a tiny electronic speaker that played a recording of his last lesson on biochemistry, ending with, This is your world. Get out and solve the problems. Would you assume the wind had been at work again? Evan chuckled and rolled his eyes. Okay, I see where you're going with this, Seth, he told him unappreciatively. Of course I wouldn't. The wind doesn't do exact images and insert lights and recordings. Where would it even get them from? Exactly, Seth agreed. But neither can blind chance. If you look carefully at any living creature, you don't discover a well-sculptured pile of snowflakes or dirt in our case. Instead, you find something that is increasingly complex the more carefully you investigate. It's not a matter of one helpful mutation at a time. There are millions of intricate, perfectly functioning parts, all fully connected and completely necessary for life to be possible. Even if we gave it millions or trillions of years, the wind could not make a perfect replica of Professor LeMans, ever. Evan sighed deeply. Consider just the complexity of a simple cell, Seth prodded further. There are two basic molecules required for the cell to function, the amino acids that combine to form proteins, and the nucleotides that combine to hold the information of our genes, instructions to create proteins. As you know, these molecules are composed of base elements, which, when combined together, make more complex structures. The DNA, or genes, provide instruction on how the amino acids must be assembled into a protein structure. Evan frowned. Given enough time, anything is possible. Seth shook his head and pressed his point further. But the beauty of the complexity increases when you see that the proteins are necessary to replicate and assemble the DNA. You see, both the amino acids and the DNA are necessary together. This shows the impossibility of life springing into existence through mere chance, because neither amino acids nor DNA can exist without the other. Both must have come into existence together, which could only have happened if a designer was creating life intentionally. Seeing that his friend still looked doubtful, Seth added, Taking this one step further, protein structures, amino acids, are also necessary to read the DNA instructions, which then are needed to assemble proteins from these instructions. It's not just a matter of time, opportunity, or probability. Macroevolution is actually impossible. And as human beings, we can't even create one simple, fully functioning living cell.
Oh, yes, we can, Evan interjected, a little overwhelmed by his friend's lengthy outburst. You may not be aware of it, but cell therapies are being created for cancer treatments. In an IVF research, scientists design genetically healthy embryos. Can anyone create a cell from scratch, using only the base elements? Well, no, Evan admitted, rather deflated. This fact had already caused him much anguish when the professor spoke of creating paradise. We still require existing functional cells with the genetics already available. He sighed. I guess only life can produce life. Closing up the textbooks on the table, Evan got ready to leave. However, Seth was tightly wound up and he wasn't quite finished. Laying his hand on Evan's arm, he asked gently, Evan, how do you think a great designer would feel if someone closely examined his ingenious craftsmanship and then told everyone that it all just happened by chance? Evan rose from his chair. His face was flushed. All the best on your exam tomorrow, Seth, he said firmly. Get those diagrams memorized tonight. I will, Seth promised, sighing heavily. Without another word, Evan headed home to his small basement apartment, a dinner of ham and eggs, and his own niggling thoughts.